Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent, returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame, the highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn but are so grateful that we did. So, meditation is something that I really struggle with. As a person who suffers from ADHD and CPTSD, it can be near impossible sometimes. However, there's not just one way to do it. It's a much more nuanced practice than I thought. My guest today is a meditation coach and all-round inspiring individual, and we are discussing all this and more. Okay, so it is 2003. Do you know what? I was saying this to Felipe just before we started. We haven't done an early noughties, or I don't like noughties episode. And I'm quite excited about that because the noughties were a very informative time for many of us. Troubling in a lot of ways. I hope that some of my listeners out there remember Heat. Heat magazine and the terrible, terrible things it did. But 2003, I just started secondary school. But in this moment, we are in Manchester. And what was the street called again?
Deansgate.
Deansgate. Deansgate for the Manchester listeners out there. We're in Deansgate. And we are in a ladies' bathroom. The year is 2003. And in this moment, why do you think you've got no friends?
Wow. Okay. I'm in an office block bathroom. It's quite a nice office block and I'm at work. And in this moment, I had the worst anxiety that I can ever remember.
Right.
I can't even tell you why it was. I just remember what happened. Mm-hmm. I couldn't walk forward or to the side. I was in the bathroom. I was having some sort of freak out on my... It wasn't even lunch break. I think I'd excused myself from my job in the office.
Right.
And I couldn't function. I was, you know, all the normal stuff like palpitations, yeah, anxiety, awful thoughts. But I went to walk towards the door and I couldn't walk forward. And then I thought, well, go back in the cubicle. And I couldn't go in there. And I was sort of turning in a circle,
yeah,
thinking, I'm malfunctioning. This is not, my body's not,
yeah,
doing anything. Mm. And it was absolutely awful.
It's strange when we discuss anxiety and the ins and outs of it and how it actually feels, because obviously there is no part of me that ever wants anybody else to experience that. And there's no part of me going, oh, I'm really glad you did that. But there is such comfort in knowing that someone else has experienced what you've experienced, the exact symptoms of it, because it's so very difficult to observe it as a thing, and not be overwhelmed by it and be able to separate yourself from it. And when someone else has experienced it, you're like, oh my God, you've had that too. It's not just me. It's not, yeah, it's not that thing of going, you are not your feelings. This is not
this is something that's happening to you.
Yeah, and that, yeah. That wasn't around at the time.
No,
there was
no
meditation was not, I mean, meditation for me in 2003 would have been an idea from the 60s. I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
I was always really spiritual. I used to pray. My hobby when I was about four was praying.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I watched my mum once lose an earring and she was looking everywhere. She was getting upset. And then she sort of stopped and said a prayer. And I said, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And she said, I'm saying a prayer to find it. And then it turned up really soon after near the stereo system. And I remember thinking, what? So there's this power that you can tap into. Well, and my favourite programme was Gem, a cartoon called Gem, which is about a girl had a secret power. She turned into a singer and a music producer.
Oh, fun.
And I was like, what? So basically I can be Jen if I just practice this. So that was me. I was done. I was like, right, off I'm just be praying in my room.
Yeah.
And then I really started, you know, becoming quite spiritual, really enjoying praying. Mm. Nobody else did that at school, so I didn't really talk about it very much. Mm. So I was always really spiritual. But as far as meditation, just wasn't, we weren't taught it. We didn't know about it. It wasn't very commercial. It just wasn't a thing. Mm. So I was anxious, you know, and the best thing I knew to do was, you know, try to say my prayers and be a good person.
Yeah.
But, I mean, now I'm lucky enough to have a meditation agency.
Yeah.
And a company that does teach it. And I'm so pleased to be able to help other people know how to control their mind.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know how to and it was horrific.
It's funny you talk about the praying thing because actually I used to do that, but I did it in a like an OCD way that when I was at boarding school, I had to pray and do the same prayer and list the same people and do it in the right order.
Yes,
and
I did that.
And if I didn't do that, then something would happen or I was doing something wrong or I was bad.
Yes.
But my mum once lost her, she had this diamond ring and she lost it and she was really sad. And I remember going to school that day and in assembly praying that she would find the ring and then coming home and she'd found it in the rubbish.
It.
And I was like, assembly, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not rocking prayer. I'm the biggest prayer out of anyone. I know I absolutely adore it. But what I've managed to realise is that whereas I was praying to something out there before, you know, after so many years of meditating and, you know, I like to study neuroscience as well, I realised that it's not that what we're going to call it. This is such a, I never know what to say, so I'm going to say higher power.
Well, that's what I do. Yeah,
the higher power, it's not out there. It's inside you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that's where all the good stuff comes from, when you realise that, you know, there's not that divide.
It's, so when you talk about higher power, do you see that from coming from within?
I definitely believe it's out there as well.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up, I thought it was like a big face in the sky.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, up there.
Yeah, Teletubby baby in the cloud.
Yeah, just to have like a nice bit of chat. I had been diagnosed with OCD and I used to do that prayer that you would do where you have to list all the people and if you left one out, they were probably going to, something was going to happen. Yeah, it would be your fault.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't understand what I was doing with it really. But now that I'm older... And also, not to say that it's not helpful to imagine a big face in the sky. If I do that, which can be helpful, you know, I'll make it him because I grew up in a Catholic school. So it was always he. And so that sort of voice that I would imagine would be a male voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll make some sort of grey haired, good looking face.
Oh, yeah,
you know, if I need to. Yeah, well, it's hot.
Obviously.
Yeah, just to make it a bit more fun.
Just to make it palatable for everybody.
Yeah. But no, I mean, often I don't do that and I know that where I'm directing my intention is inside myself and I find that that's more powerful.
Mm. Well, I guess there's a certain amount of, I've discussed this a lot on the podcast before, of I find it very, very difficult to confront people. I find it very difficult to hand over emotion or responsibility to somebody else. And I keep it all inside to basically just control it, to have some kind of control over this thing. And I realized that by doing that, I'm actually being quite controlling in a strange way for other people because I'm not allowing other people to feel what they need to feel. And then sort of came to this realization, which is not completely radical, but was radical for me, of going, oh, I can't control other people. I can't I can't force anybody else's hand. The only thing I can take care of is myself. And the only thing I can change is myself. And the only thing I can control. And I hate the word control.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate it because it sounds so... There's so many words that come up that have such different connotations. Things like control or surrender,
yeah,
or vulnerability or even manipulation, things like that. It's that they're often really ugly words, and a lot of the time they're really not. But yeah, it's funny. Mickey's my higher power.
Your cat Mickey.
My cat Mickey. He's my higher power. I think mainly because I spent so much time not being able to move and not being able to get up or even take care of myself or do anything. And Mickey, when I got Mickey, I was like, well, Mickey needs to be fed. Mickey needs his litter changed.
Yeah.
Mickey needs water. Mickey needs attention, otherwise he's going to sit on my face.
Yeah, not survive.
I'm just like, Mickey needs me. And it was this thing of going, there is something else outside of me that I can put my energy into. But that's part of the AA Alcoholics Anonymous program as well, as of just like having a higher power outside. When this thing happened in the ladies' loo, because I've had that when you've literally been paralyzed by fear and anxiety.
Yeah.
And I always feel it like, it's like my nerves wobble. It's like my arms go weak and my legs go weak. I can't, it is literally like being paralyzed. And I think for anyone who hasn't experienced it, go like, oh no, that can't happen. But people who have experienced it go, that's exactly what it is. You are completely paralyzed.
So painful,
so distressing, sickening, completely sickening. What happened? Can you remember what happened in the moments after that?
I don't. This is going back like how many years? Is it 20 years ago? So I was about 20. Mm. I think I probably rang my mom. I probably went back to my desk in some sort of like, sort of head down, wipe your eyes scenario.
Mm.
But also through that time in my early 20s, I would probably try to just party that sort of thing away.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, music is really helpful for the mental health, but going out partying and sort of being destructive to your own body, very fun at the time. But, you know, as a medication, it's not.
It prolongs and distracts.
Yeah, it really does make it worse. But, I mean, I spent years doing that because I didn't know what else to do.
Of course, but it's a natural thing, and it's like it's part of the culture, and it's very accepted as a thing. But I always say that this stuff is this treat this stuff like a bear hunt, like going on a bear hunt. You can't go over it. You can't go under it.
Yeah.
You can't go around it.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to go through it.
You do.
You have to go through it. You've got to treat this all like a bear hunt. And going out is and getting trashed and distracting. It works momentarily.
Yeah.
And then, but it does prolong it. And while if you don't do that, you may feel things more heavily at first, but it does shorten the process so much and also makes other bits far easier to manage.
Yeah, yeah. My 20s, I worked as a dancer for about 10 years.
Did you? Where did you dance? Tell me about your dancing. Bloody love a dancer.
Well, I mean, I wish I could say, well, if I was a ballet dancer, I was a podium dancer. So I would do the Seasons in Ibiza or Greece or the Canaries. So I was nocturnal.
Mm.
I was just hiding from, I would just be awake in the night, dance as a job, be asleep in the day.
Mm.
And I sort of avoided dealing with why I was anxious. And all the time just sort of tried to be a good person and kept my spiritual health good.
Mm.
But my physical and mental health wasn't right. And it was only when one of my best friends, Lisa, she gave me the book, The Power of Now, by Eckhart Tolle.
Yeah, Eckhart Tolle, got it upstairs.
Oh, God, Eckhart, we love you.
The Power of Now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she gave me that. And then that's how I realised about presence. And I started practising that. And then I'd moved into a job when I had my son. I became a learning and development coordinator. I sort of climbed the ranks after I finished dancing, because once I had my son, I couldn't be a dancer anymore. Mm. So I worked on this national contract and was put in charge of mental health. And because I was very spiritual and I was learning about meditation, and my job was to be able to condense ideas and make them teachable, I started studying with a trauma therapist from the London Maudsley Hospital, which is a neuroscience hospital. And she taught me all about presence, which is a meditation with your eyes open, a way of controlling your mind. I couldn't believe it all. We started rolling it out nationally. The feedback was amazing, like better sleep, improved relationships, higher self, a sense of self-worth. And I knew that that was, you know, the way. And it's through years of meditation that you sort of go inside and see what's in there, that you sort of start to understand everything. Mm. And I was able to look back at past experiences. And I know this podcast is also about shame. And when I look back at, I was able to look back on things that I thought that I'd done wrong and understand them as part of an outplay of situations. So things that, mistakes that I had made growing up, you know, and I think it's Brené Brown, isn't it? She says shame is when you think you are bad, and guilt is when you think you've done something bad.
Exactly. It's the difference between guilt and shame. Of guilt going, guilt is when I have stolen something. Shame is I am a thief.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, whatever other circumstances. Shame is fully believing and letting it encompass you, whereas guilt is the, yeah, exactly.
There's so much you can say in that. I mean, you could write a dissertation just on what we've just said, but we'll try and narrow it down. So
narrow it down for the
yeah, yeah. We've not got time on Simon.
Let me get out your manuscript.
Yeah. In fact, I've written one. Hang on, that's what the bag is.
Chapter one.
So basically, what it is it's because my brain's split in two ways, and I thought, shall I talk about meditation? As in, like, you come back to the fact that, you know, the only thing that you actually are is alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you could, my brain sort of went over to the spiritual side and the sort of God side, where most religions point to the fact that whatever it is that they're calling God, I think it's just that there is this I am, and it's just life again. So either way that you go, it's just that you are there. So if you... if what you believe is that you fundamentally you are life, then you can't be, you know, a bad person, because you've come back further than that. So then you look at what you've done. Okay, is it not shame? Is it guilt? And then if you do think, okay, well, I shouldn't have done that, I think guilt sometimes is actually quite a productive emotion.
I agree. Guilt is far more beneficial than shame is.
Yeah, but it's something to like have as a hotel stay. Don't put a down payment on it. Yeah. You know, just it's a temporary thing. Yes, yeah. I shouldn't have done
didn't
that.
Didn't like that.
Yeah, yeah.
One star review.
Yeah. So just convert it. What lesson would you have had to know? What would you have had to know for that not to have happened? And then instead of feel guilty about that past situation, give yourself a chance to apply that lesson in real terms in your present day, and then you've converted it already. And also, when you've made it, when certainly for me, the things that I look back on and I think I wish I hadn't done that, and I do feel guilty, you know, the reason that I make most or used to make most bad decisions was through fear and anxiety. And then why was I anxious? It was probably because, unfortunately, I had grew up with a father who has a really big struggle with alcohol.
Right.
But then, you know, I'm not going to blame him, because he's like that, because his mother had a terrible, terrible time when they were all young. So it's not that you have to blame somebody. You just understand that things are happening as an outplay of, you know, it's just this pattern where things are just pouring forward in time.
Yeah.
And then if you take the lesson out of it and apply it, the guilt isn't necessary anymore.
It's, I said this the other day, actually, someone was like, finding the root of trauma, the root of problems, is like trying to find a needle in a haystack. Over years and years, it has grown and it's mutated and it's different, and people have found their own ways of coping. Yeah. And yes, some ways are better than others. And there's a huge amount of darkness coming before us, coming from our family. And I felt very angry about that darkness, very angry about what has come before. But then looking at it as a way of going, they have that dark, they are holding on to that darkness, so I don't need to have it. Do you know what I mean? There's sort of this they're almost holding that darkness for me so I can take the light away from it.
Bless you.
And it's helped with a lot of... Oh, my God.
Are you going to cry? Yeah. I want to give you a hug and then I'll probably...
It's helped with that. Oh, my guys, sorry. I'm very emotional at the moment. I'm just...
Get it out.
Hormonal. It's helped with a lot of anger towards family and other people to almost see them carrying that darkness so I don't have to.
What do you mean by carrying the darkness?
Sort of like almost showing through no real effort or fault of their own, showing you what not to do.
Yeah.
They've done that so you won't do it. Yeah. It's very complex, sort of very complicated way of, I'm sure I have a better way of describing it. It's, I think I've talked a lot about generational trauma before and how things get handed down. And often it's the people who appear pointing out what's wrong that get really shunned from the family. And I don't know if it's an actual thing. I should look it up, but I call it the Cassandra complex because my best friend kept calling me Cassandra. Yeah, Cassandra, Greek mythology, who was cursed by Apollo? Felipe? I think Cassandra was cursed by Apollo to see the truth and see the future, but her curse was that no one would ever believe her.
Right.
And so... It's often a really difficult feeling, like you can see this darkness and you can see this truth, but a lot of the time if you say it, people will be like, oh, she's crazy. Because everyone thought Cassandra was crazy. Everyone called her crazy. She's always the crazy one. And a lot of sort of like bad productions of Agamemnon. Agamemnon, there's the introduction to Agamemnon and Cassandra comes on and it's just like loony with like wild hair and it's like, and it's just like the crazy one, like a ripped dress.
Yeah.
And actually, I just think that she's like the most sane one there being like, guys, I can see what's going on.
Yeah.
If you go, you're going to die if you do that. And people are like, nah, she's crazy. She's crazy.
It's so difficult, isn't it? Putting yourself out with anything in case you think people might think... I'm mad. You know, I've got to be really careful in my career to keep it, because I'm the director and there's 12 meditation teachers and there's thousands of people coming through the agency now. Mm. I think in the next month we'll have done another 1,000 people.
Wow.
But they're contracted within the parameters of the brand so that what we're teaching is... we're only teaching things that have been proven to be effective in clinical trials. So, you know, even if some of them believe it, that they may have clairvoyant gifts, they've contracted, there can be no clairvoyant aspect to any class.
Right.
The parameters are really, really straight for awake so that it's really highly ethical so that the service we're delivering is not only consistent, but it's real.
Yes, okay.
But then I have, you know... There's the spiritual aspect, which there aren't many clinical trials on. And I have to make sure that what I say or what I teach in the Higher Power course, which is online, which is basically how to, and I don't like the word control your mind, but separate your mind from your conscious awareness. So you've got a part of a formation in your brain that's about the size of your little finger and it's a bundle of neurons. And basically, because we pick up so many bits of data, millions of bits of data every day, you have to be able to filter it out, otherwise you would overload. So in the same way, if I said to you, have a look at anything brown in the, you know, take 10 seconds and see everything brown in the room, and then everything brown would begin to pop.
Yes.
And then if I said, close your eyes now, tell me everything green, you wouldn't really know what to say because your brain filtered out green and made brown pop.
Yeah.
So that is what your brain is able to do. So if you meditate, you're able to control your mind, decide what you want from life, like set it in, lock it in your mindset, then your brain will, in your awake time, in your awake meditation, start to make those things pop and filter out from your perception the opposite of it, which is what is taught in the Higher Power course. which you can get at awakemeditation.co.uk. But I've got to be really careful, because you've got to be able to say things in terms of making sure that the masses can relate to it. Otherwise, you risk yourself being alienated where people don't understand you. So yeah. I'm really far down my journey, but yeah. the brand of Awake Meditation has to be really accessible to everybody, no matter what part they're at.
One thing I wanted to ask you about is, because I suffer really badly. I've got really terrible ADHD, got really bad CPTSD, which is complex post-traumatic stress disorder. I've discussed it quite a lot before on the podcast. For those who haven't listened to the episode of trauma, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, usually occurs from a singular event or an assault or a car accident or some kind of bereavement, potentially. And you suffer with the symptoms of that. Complex post-traumatic stress disorder is when that situation is repeated and repeated and repeated and repeated. And so therefore your amygdala is constantly on high alert. Mm-hmm. That's a real nutshell explanation. Mm. But I find, same way when I go to sleep, I find it very difficult. In fact, I can't unless I am completely, I am so pooped that I'll fall asleep on the ground. Unless I have something going on, like playing in my ears, I find it very difficult to sleep.
So you're trying to distract yourself from it?
It's, I find that the minute I'm given quiet, because I've really tried meditation.
What type of meditation have you tried?
Headspace.
Yeah. Oh, right. Do you know, I've never even been on Headspace.
Oh, yeah.
No. Which is crazy, isn't it, in my field? But I'm so busy doing what I'm doing, I'm not sort of looking left or right.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
But what I would say is, if you're in fight or flight, which is your sympathetic nervous system, which is your amygdala, the only way to calm it down is to go into your parasympathetic nervous system. And that's really easy to do by focusing your attention within your body. I mean, even right now, if you sort of put your hands out and then send as much, like get as much attention and awareness as you can possibly gather and feel the inside of your hands, not the outside of your hands, but so that all the nerve endings and the cells begin to really fire, and you hold on to that feeling, say, for 5 seconds. I can guarantee while you were doing that, I mean, you don't have to do it now, but
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, but you're not thinking of anything. So you're beginning to move towards rest and digest. So if you, I can't talk for all meditations, through awake meditation, you can learn in the stage one course online how to begin to do that with your body, and so you can do it all over. That is what presence is, to be in your body. And so you're living in your parasympathetic nervous system. You're living not from a stance of brace.
Yeah.
But you're living in, you know, your rest and digest, and then your perspective on everything changes.
I am really terrified of the quiet, mainly because of the complex trauma that I feel the minute I try to quiet my brain, it's like the opportunity is taken by flashbacks. And because my ADHD as well, I won't even notice my brain changing, and suddenly I'll be somewhere completely different. I struggle with it so much. And I think if there is a way to do it, because when I look at meditation apps it was Max I was talking to this about this too, about going I feel as someone who talks so readily about mental health and the ways we can help ourselves, I find it, I almost shame myself for not being able to do it because of the extreme benefits it provides. And my sister is a huge advocate. She does it every single day.
Yeah.
But there's this thing of going, I feel like I can't do it. So therefore I'm not trying hard enough, and have really shamed myself for that in the past. But I think if there are ways to go, like you said, even for 5 seconds, have you heard of DBT, which is dialectical behavioral therapy?
No, I've heard of CBT.
Mm. So CBT is thinking your way out of a situation.
Mm.
DBT is doing your way out of a situation.
Yeah.
So DBT means... if you are in, and I really wish there was another word for triggered.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the words triggered and traumatized get thrown around like bloody sweets at a pantomime.
I listened to your Max Selwood.
Did you?
Yeah. I was driving up to Cheshire.
This is me being like, I can't meditate.
I just mean you talked about triggered and people throwing words around.
Yeah. I don't like the word triggered because I feel like it's overused.
Mm-hmm.
And same way with traumatized, when people go, oh my God, that was so traumatizing. I'm like, no, it wasn't.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what Max and I was
yeah,
like.
Yeah.
Was it traumatizing?
OCD as well, yeah.
Yeah, oh God, that's so OCD.
I know.
Nope.
I've just got to hoover that again because I'm OCD.
Max, like, mate, have you ever thought about punching a baby?
You're throwing a baby down the stairs. Yeah. I know, but it's true. Visualizations I used to have, the only comfort I can offer you, I'm sure I could offer you lots of comfort, but in the next minute, is that when I was young, I used to suffer so much, you know, mental health issues. I've had them. In fact, I don't know much about ADHD, and I'm pretty sure I don't have that, but OCD, chronic anxiety I was diagnosed with, and the visualizations, you know, my mum could be talking to me, asking me if I wanted peas or beans, and I would just, you know, see something horrific, like I just stood with an axe in her head or something awful.
I
don't know why, but I was just so anxious that, you know, it was just, and I used to tell her, I was open about it and say, Mum, this, and she would say, I mean, bless her, she would say, try not to worry so much, babe. And I think, thanks, Mum, that's really helpful. Try not to worry so much. I even hear that still. But no, she is a wonderful mum. But at the time, I didn't know what was going on. But I can only offer that I now don't experience any of those things or anxiety or shame or guilt, because I'm able to see my mind really clearly and use it. You know, awake is not about finger pinching or sitting up, because I'm really lazy. The idea of pinching my fingers for an hour is like, I mean, this microphone's really...
already was that. Yeah.
This is really heavy.
Yeah.
But all I can say is that you can get to the other side completely. Mm. And all the answers that you need are in your body. They're in your body. Your body is your best guide.
Yeah. I'm so scared of it because... actually, it was strange. A couple of days ago, I had a real wobble, and I think it's important that I do say that. I had a real wobble on Friday night. I think it was Friday. Anxiety bubbled to my eyeballs in a way that it hasn't properly for a while. And I started, and it was like it started... how it always starts, where you go, I feel a little bit weird. Well, that's fine. And then suddenly, within 5 minutes, you're hyperventilating. And my heart literally, it was beating so fast. And it felt my chest, it does this thing where it feels really weak. And I can't grab it. And I texted Max Selwood going, hey, mate, when you thought you were having arse at that time, like,
how
did it feel like this? And within 1 minute, the phone was going, and it was Max being like, hi, mate, you all right? And I was like, I don't know what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And I think it is really important that I still really struggle, and I still have these really terrible moments, because I think there's a danger as being someone who speaks so much about mental health, we said that people kind of think that you're a Jedi who has all the answers and is fixed and healed. It's not. I think it's important to go, we still need to do things and put things in place. Like you still need, even though you are teaching it, you still need to do it yourself to just like to pass it off. I still really struggle and have really bad days, and I need to put things in place to be able to help deal with those things. And I find that really difficult because the moment that I begin to shut my brain down, or not shut my brain down, but calm my mind, like I said, is when these terrible flashbacks come in. And it's always something different. They're always playing a new movie. They pick up something different. It's something that I maybe have forgotten about. And I was like, oh, fuck, I forgot about that thing. And I feel in those moments, I feel so much shame. I'm very afraid of what happens when I begin to quiet my mind.
And what you're saying is that things that happened really in real life, or things you're imagining?
The complex trauma things. And the shame I have surrounding things that happened before I went into recovery. And things like that. And I'm still finding it very difficult to forgive myself for the past. I'm afraid of meditation because I'm afraid of what's going to be presented to me in those moments.
You can learn with your eyes open.
Yeah.
You know, and if your eyes closed is quite a big one.
But yeah.
What would you have, I mean, you of course don't tell me what it is that you see, and you don't need to.
Mm.
What would you have needed to know for that situation not to have happened?
I mean, it's sort of everything, really. I don't feel like I really truly started living any kind of life until I went into recovery just over 20 months ago. I think I was undiagnosed, really, really unwell. Really unwell. And had brain damage that I didn't know about. And it's a very difficult thing to say that you have brain damage, because people are quite afraid of that. They get very, very nervous of things like that. It's the experience that I've had that... Hi, Mix.
Oh.
So Mickey's joined the chat because he sees him crying. And it's a sort of living that life for, you know, nearly 30 years completely in survival mode, very unwell. Having to reprogram that and literally parent myself and become a new person is obviously the most incredible gift, and I'm so grateful for it. But everything that came before that, I'm still struggling so much with. Even though I know that a lot of the choices that I made were coming from a place of literally not being able to make rational decisions, being so deeply unwell that I couldn't understand the consequences of actions, which is another side effect of complex trauma and trauma, is that if you have lived in a situation where everything is bad, you can't see consequences. You don't have the ability to see consequences because things have always been on this cycle of bad. So you're just living right now in this thing feels good. This thing right here feels good. So I'm going to dive into this because things will always be bad, which is why I think there's some alcohol and drug addiction and everything plays a role in it, because
you're trying to numb it.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're going, this thing right here feels good. And it's a feeling of not existing. It's when you're if your body, your mind, everything has been so brutally used by other people or just in life, if that has been so abused, you disassociate from yourself. So when I was drinking loads and taking those drugs and self-sabotaging and self-harming, it was like it didn't have an effect. It wasn't going to have an effect because my body didn't belong to me. Mm. And the way that I describe it is as being as literally as breakable as like iron, but at the same time as real as a unicorn.
Yeah.
You at the same time are unbreakable and don't exist. So, Mickey. So it's only when you go into recovery, really, of understanding that you're a real, living, breathing human.
And really precious as well.
Really precious.
Really, and not precious at all. You're a bit precious. Like, really.
Yeah.
Really, human beings are so incredibly special and precious and amazing. And you, Felipe, producer Felipe, it's so important to understand how beautiful and precious you are.
Mm.
Above everything, you're alive, your source is life, and you are incredibly, incredibly, I could cry, very, very special. And all of those things that you worry about and the memories or the future projections, they are on top of that, like clutter, and underneath is really, really life itself. And there's no getting away from that. I don't need a clinical trial to prove that. You're very, very special and you don't need to worry.
Oh, it's a reminder of that. My sponsor said to me the other day, she went, she said, you know you're amazing, right?
Yeah.
You know you're amazing. What you did and what you came through. You're amazing. And I immediately, as so many of us do, went, can you just take the fucking compliment?
Yeah, I know. It's like when somebody says, oh, your chop's nice. Like, this is shape.
I got it out of the garbage. It's nothing to me.
She sounds like a good woman. I'm sure she was right.
She's amazing. And she is amazing. And she was like, you do not give yourself enough credit. And she's like, you're amazing. My boyfriend says it. He goes, you're amazing. I get very like, please don't say those things, because the way that I hurt people in the past, unintentionally, like it was never malicious.
Yeah.
It's not malicious bone. It's like a time of being really sick and not being able to understand.
Yeah.
As much as it seemed like I could, because I was still doing life, still hanging out, still being a shit ton of fun.
Yeah.
But just completely, basically out of my mind. The way I unintentionally hurt friends and people, whenever anyone says that you're special, you're great.
You think, that stuff that you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And the minute that I quiet my mind for meditation, it's like it comes in going, you think you're a good person? Remember when this happened?
Listen, I mean, wait till you have kids. Wait till the guilt that's coming when you get kids. Some of my most awful memories of things that I feel terrible about the way I've acted. I mean, I've not done anything really awful. Nobody needs to call social services or anything. But some of the things that give me the shivers the most in terms of memories of the last, say, 10 years is just how I acted in particular situations, because I was so... I mean, I'll give you an example if you want.
Only if you're comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay because it's productive. I think I had a 3-week old baby strapped to my chest. So my daughter was on my chest and my son was probably about 7. And I think it started because he wanted to have a lollipop. And I said, don't have the lollipop yet, but he ignored me and he just opened it. And then that sort of started something.
Mm.
And it escalated, I can't remember how, to him running off.
Right.
Which he'd never done before. And this was in the absolute thick of COVID when you thought if you touched a leaf that you would probably die. Yeah. Like, we were like, not touching anything, don't go near anyone. Yeah. So he ran off. He ran across the road with cars. like, the baby was there. And I was, like, so frantic. And when it went on for a bit. And when I got him back, I was so worried that he was going to run off again. And also my mind was playing like, oh, if he runs off now when he's 15 and you tell him not to get in a drug dealer's car, he'll probably get in a drug dealer's car. You have to control him. You know, I was like, I'm losing control as a mother. So then I think I only said the words something like, don't run off again or you'll be in a lot of trouble. But I think a lot of trouble came out so loud.
Yeah.
And I was pretty close to him as well.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody gave me that snapshot of that happening, I would be mortified that I lost control like that. And he was very upset. And that replays sometimes that I did that. Yeah, I really shouted at him in the road through just fear and anxiety. And I thought he was going to get killed on the road. But when my mind goes there, I think, first of all, I understand why I did it. I was scared. I'm allowed to be scared. I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
I am a very good mum. Yeah. So I'm not doing that to him now. That is a memory in the past. And what did I need to know for that not to have happened? I needed to know that my anger in that moment and trying to make him get home so everything was right, I was trying to push us into a future scenario for everything to be fine, because if we just get to the future, it's all going to be fine. Mm. You know, oh, hi, Mickey approves of what I'm saying, because I want to have some good vibes going on. Yeah, I thought, you know, forcing a future moment is not going to help.
Yeah.
And you've just got to sort of accept and be and try and not be afraid, even when things are difficult. So, and I do apply that, and I convert that awful memory all the time. Mm-hmm. I did it, I think, on Sunday. We were meant to go to this football match and my daughter was running around. She just wouldn't put her leggings on. Mm. And I was getting more and more. And in my head, I was thinking, I'm going to miss this football match. I miss so much already. I'm going to be a terrible mum. I'm going to be late. He's going to think, oh, my mum's always late. And I was getting more like, Aurelia, you need to put your leggings on. Just come in. Aurelia, I've asked 4 times now. Please put your leggings on. And I was I thought, my personality's going to switch. I'm not going to be nice. And I remembered the lesson that if I push us into a future moment where she needs to put her leggings on and then we'll be on time for the football, that everything will be fine. But really, it wouldn't, because she'd have got upset because I'd have lost my rag. I'd have been stressed and we would have got there on time, but we would have both been in a bad mood. That wouldn't be good for Callum anyway. Mm. So I was like, I remembered the lesson. I converted the guilt again in real time and I just let us be late. And she probably tied it at Ollie's and then put them on, but we both got there in a good mood.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to sort of understand your worst fears have got a lesson in. And if you can work out what the lesson is and keep the lesson with you, because nobody needs the guilt. You don't need it. Nobody else needs it. It's non-productive. If you work out what the lesson is, that becomes your friend and you've converted it.
That's one of the wisest things that I think has ever been said on this podcast.
Yes!
You won.
Oh, I'm really pleased.
You won the prize. I think that is actually truly, that's a really truly glorious way of, I've never considered that, of creating this future moment and not only really seeing this like zenith that could happen and not applying all the other things that will happen if you get the one thing that you want, which is being on time.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's crazy how quickly our minds can escalate and catastrophize, and in the space of a split second.
Oh yeah.
You can go blah 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 blah. In an instant all of these things happening, and you immediately believe them and go, the only way to rectify this is if we are on time and we need to do this and we need to make it happen. And you forget all of the other things that will go into it should that be the case. So I'm going to ask you now my favorite question. I talked a lot about meditation and anxiety and the benefits of it, but what are the things about you as a person that you really value and cherish and love?
I'm grateful of my courage because when I was younger, I never used to say to anyone, I didn't really talk to my friends, I believe in God or I'm spiritual, you know, it was quite a quiet thing. And the more I realized that meditation and spirituality and, you know, all of this, awake meditation, I've got to really put myself out there and risk alienation and people thinking, what is she going on about? I've got to be really courageous to do it. But I'm doing it and nobody is doing that. People are telling me that I'm helping them, which is great. So I have to be courageous. And I didn't think I was a very courageous person, but it turns out that I am. So I'm really grateful for that. And in my life, I'm really grateful for the set of friends I have and the people that I have in my family. They're really inspiring people. They're not necessarily like me. They're all really different to each other, but they're all really pursuing their passion and pushing it and doing extremely well in their field. And I find that really inspiring. So I'm really lucky and grateful for the people in my life because they keep me going.
That's kind of that actually is pretty much the next question, which is that we have a little portion we call thank you letters where we ask you to express gratitude for person, place or thing or one of all three.
Just one.
Or we can do it as many as you like, really. But your family, definitely. Yeah,
I'm really grateful to my mum because she is a really good person and she taught me to be really questioning and she gave me a permanent safe space to try to figure everything out. And she's incredible and part of me. And please God, one day I'll make my daughter feel like that.
Love it. I love it. And where can we find Awake Meditation and your business? And
well, we do public courses. You can get private teachers. So lots of people want teachers in their homes. You know, they might do it as a family. They might do it as a single person, a couple. They, you know, get it every Wednesday night or whatever. So that's across the home counties and throughout London. You can do it online at awakemeditation.co.uk. For businesses, we've done really well in the corporate world. We got the award just lately. We got Corporate Wellbeing Specialist of the Year for London and South East. Yep, we did that. And we're in schools. So if there's any people listening out there that, you know, are part of a school, we can do 300 kids in a day. We've got quite a few schools coming up next week. Yeah, you just go to awakemeditation.co.uk if you want to start now. You go to the online sessions tab. Stage one is there. That's your how-to guide for any beginners that don't know what they're doing. Stage two is more spiritual. And by the end of stage three, you know everything I know. I've condensed it and it's there. It's ready to go.
I will link everything below. So please, please just do a little scroll down in the bio and you will find the link. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This has been such a joy. And thank you. There's only the really good ones that made me cry.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, they're all amazing, of course, but you're an elite group.
Thank you for
making me cry. But thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.